But you gotta watch out for the Cascadian subduction zone.
The what?
No?
You ever heard of the Cascading Abduction Zone?
The Cascadian Subduction Zone, man.
Do I guard my butthole?
In the next, it's not going to happen while you're there, but Portland is about 100 years overdue for a city-destroying earthquake.
Well, now I'm terrified.
Yeah. Anyway.
Also, we were recording during that, too. So.
Live from Monster Dome, deep underneath and yet somehow still five stories above Austin, Texas, this is Inside the Locker, the geekiest sportscast you've ever heard.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Inside the Locker, the number one podcast on iTunes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's not true.
That sounds accurate. Probably not true. That might not be true. My name is Ramon Ramirez.
Well, it may not be a lie.
I am your host. With me, as always, the starting five, Elliot Fontanet.
Hey, how y'all doing?
JC DeLeon.
What's up?
Logan Urie.
Hello.
And live via Skype, the beef nugget himself, Adam Charles. What's going on?
Nothing. I'm not wearing any pants.
Ah, you
bastard.
You lucky son of a bitch.
I don't want to be wearing pants right now.
That's where the name Beef Nuggets comes from.
We're coming to you live from Thunderdome here. We're going to be holding your hand and guiding you through this next hour and a half to 2 hours. Probably like hour 20 is about what we want to do. We actually do have a lot to unpack.
Hope you got a snack because it's going to be a 14-hour flight.
It's going to be a long podcast. Anyone that's been listening to us the last few weeks, and we appreciate you listening to us, and you can always check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/ITLcast. Hit us up on iTunes. Friend us on MySpace. But basically, we have – the beginning of every episode, we come on and we say, oh, it's the doldrums of summer. Well, hey, guys, it's August. If you are in school right now, you're about to go back to school. This is – you're getting all the, like, back-to-school shopping commercials. You're getting stressed out across the board. Here is the point. A lot is staring us in the face.
Mm-hmm.
It's a time of transition, a time of change, and we have to jump right into it.
Yep.
So let's get into some headlines. I guess first big thing to talk about, and that's the most transcendent and dominant athlete in the game right now, I'd say, this side of maybe LeBron James. And that's Ronda Rousey.
Yep.
She, I thought you were going to say Donald Trump.
Definitely not Donald Trump. Although we will get into Donald Trump later. Yeah. And, you know, I usually tease that we should tease the show.
How's that going to happen?
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about college football, which does not have anything to do with Donald Trump. We're gonna just dispense some more of those fantasy cheat codes and talk a little bit. Today we're going to be talking about the wide receiver position. When should you draft one? Who is on your board? Who do we love? Then we're going to talk a little politics. We're not in the business of endorsing candidates, but we are in the business of playing. We do like to analyze things. We do like polls. We do like power rankings. So we're going to be giving you the top five Republican power rankings now that the first Republican debate has started. Has happened, and it's officially season. It's officially it's campaign season.
It's game on right now.
The race is on. Game's on. Preseason's over. We're going to talk a little, John Stewart left. He's a hero to a lot of us. We're going to talk a little bit about retirement, a little bit about kind of what that means, and then we'll close with probably a little Freebird. We'll close with a little Freebird. Yeah.
If I leave tomorrow, baby.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's start with Fantastic Four.
Ready.
Oh, God. A movie you get. I'm kidding. No,
Jesus Christ.
No, we're gonna do a little cross promotional tour here. JC and Elliot we're recording this on a Wednesday night. They have just seen Fantastic Four. They do not like it. You can listen to that on the other
spoiler.
Yeah, they don't like that. I guess by the time you're listening to this, that won't be surprising. I'm guessing most of the reviews will be negative. I think most of the reviews are negative.
Okay, it's one of the few like fully consensus. I don't think anybody liked it.
Yeah, and the thing that's frustrating is I'm just disappointed. I was expecting better out of Josh Trank, who did Chronicle.
I'm not mad. Yeah, I'm just disappointed.
Exactly. Like that's a good movie.
And it's frustrating because he's, I think he's right in our age bracket, right? Yeah. He's like our peer. And so you want someone that kind of reflects our generation.
What, 22?
He's like 31, 35.
Yeah, he's like –
he was born in like 83.
And that movie has such great actors and actresses. It has Kate Mara. I think that's her name. Kate Mara.
She was the one that got pushed in front of a bus.
I wasn't sure if it was Rooney Mara or Kate Mara.
It was Kate Mara.
I don't know any other name.
I get her confused with her sister.
Rooney was Dragon Tattoo. Kate Mara got pushed in front of a train.
Yeah.
Kate's been doing it longer.
Exactly. Okay. That's what she said.
So, anyway.
It has Michael B. Jordan. It has Miles Teller.
I would love to sit here and talk about it. I really, like, because I want to hear why it's a bad movie. But you, the listener, can hear a very detailed breakdown if you just go back on your iTunes feed and look at the movie podcast. It'll say, like, review Fantastic Four.
If you look for the number 2 podcast on iTunes, then you'll...
Yeah.
And if you want to see another review, Ashley and I reviewed Shaun the Sheep, which is a very warm and fun movie.
So check that out on iTunes. Yeah. And you know, and listen to it, because, like, I'm legitimately curious. I'm just very fascinated by superhero movies. There's so many of them I dislike and so many of them I really like, and I just think they're so interesting.
Would you ever want to review movies?
No. I don't know. I'm not a very good movie critic. I don't have the context and the talent to really go there. But I do like them. I do enjoy them. And all right.
Yeah, the good news is most people don't.
Yeah, we just sort of do it.
You guys are good. You guys are good. I'd be just being like, well, that sucked. I didn't think that was any good, man.
Also, I'm a sports expert. So.
All right. So let's dive in. Ronda Rousey. Do we already talk about Ronda Rousey?
No, we didn't get to.
Ronda Rousey, kicking ass, taking names, and continuing to transcend the game. The most important athlete right now in MMA, maybe in sports period. What's the latest?
Well, she basically won 5 fights by the time it took us to talk about her. That's what it sounds like.
Wait, hold on. Time out.
She won in, 34 seconds this past week?
34 seconds.
Yeah. What are you counting down, Elliot?
Yeah, right.
I just held my breath longer than that fight lasted.
Okay.
Sorry. We almost seriously just stopped recording. We were very, very, like, stressed out because Elliot was sitting here, like, counting very, like, loudly and gesturing.
This isn't a visual medium, so I was like, what are you doing?
We were like, man, are you having a heart attack? Okay, are you okay?
So, yeah, specifically.
My left arm.
So this past weekend, I watched... I watched the entire UFC card because I misread the time. But also, you have to get to Dave and Buster's early if you want to watch the main fight. And I didn't get there early enough because I still stood on my feet for 5 hours.
Damn.
And it's weird because it's weird to think that I stood on my feet for that long just to watch Ronda Rousey beat her opponent in 34 seconds. And I was okay with it. I didn't feel like I wasted my time.
Really?
That 34 seconds, like, I like her as an athlete. I like her brashness. Yeah, she's completely transcendent. There's just so dominant. There's really nobody who can touch her.
There's something special about watching somebody that dominant at their prime.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the news that came out in, you know, besides her winning that fight and defending her title, her autobiography, My Fight, Your Fight, is going to be adapted into a film, and she's going to play herself.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a little troublesome.
Yeah, I mean.
It's kind of like 8 Mile.
Okay.
Yeah. 8 Mile worked. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. I mean, that being said, like, can you think of anybody else who you would want to see play Ronda Rousey?
Oh yeah. I mean, she's
Hillary Swank.
Hillary Swank. Yeah. Donald Trump.
I mean, Donald want Trump. To play Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it because I think I kind of have a weird obsession with her anyway. So
it's baby.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I do like, you know, there is something to be said about you know, without objectifying her, the fact that she is like a very beautiful woman that's like transcending and kind of rewriting sort of modern beauty standards, because she'll show up to award shows and just like be incredibly incredibly feminine, but still like unmistakably who she is, which is one of the best conditioned athletes in the world, and it's really cool to see that.
And to kind of segue into one of our regular segments, Twitter beef of the week. A lot of people want her to fight Christian Cyborg Justino,
the one who beat up, who like almost killed.
Yeah. And so there's been big controversy about that because Cyborg isn't technically a UFC fighter. She also outweighs Ronda by a lot, and Ronda has gone to Twitter saying she'll fight Cyborg when Cyborg gets off steroids.
Damn.
To which Cyborg threatened legal action instead of actually beating her up.
Interesting. Well, I suppose that's fair. You know, if somebody said you were on steroids, slanderous, whatever. All right. Adrenaline shots fired. So there you go. Ronda Rousey. Now, here's what we're going to do next. It is almost college football season.
Thank God.
Almost yay.
Yeah. Almost yay. Thank God. But in some ways, it already is college football season because the first top 25 polls of the season were released on Wednesday. fans have several weeks to argue about this, circle their calendar, get upset about certain factoids. Now, we'll be perfectly honest, none of us have looked at this poll yet. Right? Have you? I think you have. I think JC has.
I've glanced at it.
Well, just to, but the point is, we haven't like looked at it. We haven't like gone through it and just been like, okay, this is what we think. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna give you guys the sort of like the idiot's guide to the top 25 in college football as presented by Relative Idiots, by which I mean like we're not really up on game just yet. We're just kind of looking at this poll and remembering last year and just kind of thinking, hey, I remember that team. I remember that game. All right. So we'll just kind of spit some factoids and run through this quickly because otherwise we can really sit here and waste a lot of time. Now, before we move forward, we need to be very upfront about our biases. In other words, who we root for, who we like, who we dislike. Obviously, I'm a Texas fan. No one knows that. But I'm a Texas fan. I grew up in Austin. My mother's a professor at UT.
Oh, wow.
And I went to Texas, so I love Texas more than anything. Now, Logan, I think Logan's also a Texas fan.
I don't like anybody.
Logan is a Texas Aggie, which
we're very sorry about.
No, nah, the Aggies are awesome. It's just it's a bummer that they don't play the Longhorns anymore. It's a shame.
I think all Texans agree with that.
Yeah, Adam, who's your team?
I am definitely a Texas fan. I think living here in Austin since I was 10 years old.
That'll do it, bro.
The team I've inherited. So I've been Texas since I was at least in high school.
I love that, JC. What about you?
I tend not to, with professional sports, I tend not to harbor any kind of regional loyalty, but living here, I moved here when Texas won the national championship, and, like, that was an awesome night. I just kind of, you know, being local and accessible, I like all things Longhorns, football, basketball, baseball.
I was in California that night, and I was very happy to be there.
JC. Wait, Elliot.
LSU, baby.
LSU
all the way.
Nobody recognized that fight song. So
yeah. That fight song. The only fight song that's better than that is USC's fight song. I fucking hate school, but their fight song is legit.
I like to call Elliot the Tiger.
Before I moved to Texas, I did grow up in the Bible Belt, and so I inherited a love of the history of Notre Dame. So I do also have sort of a nostalgic affinity for Notre Dame.
Interesting.
Yeah, all right.
My high school fight song was the Notre Dame fight song, and so I have an affinity for that.
It's interesting. A lot
of all of Notre Dame is what we're saying.
Yeah. Okay. Go Irish.
My high school fight song was my middle school fight song was the Ohio State fight song. But same thing. You just recycle those, right? Like, you know, what Ohio State is like, bum 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 bum. That's Ohio State. Michigan is like, hail to the victors. Or that's Michigan. And then Notre Dame, how does the Notre Dame one go? I don't know.
Yes.
That was great. Yeah, you're right. You're totally right.
And I played it on trombone, and that was so fun. Just be like with the slide up and down, man.
I played trombone too.
You know, for both of y'all, as somebody who played saxophone, one of the easiest instruments to play, much respect for the trombone because that shit has to be hard to like memorize those positions as you bring them in.
There's only seven of them. It wasn't that hard.
But still, like, I think it's like seven position is like you just have to throw your arm all the way out there.
There's nine if you do it right.
That's what she said.
You got to go in on that. All right. So anyway, all right. So there you go. Now that's the disclosure. You guys know where the bias comes from, and we're gonna move forward. All right. Number 25 on the poll, and I have the Sports Illustrated website loaded up in front of me. That would be the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Finished 10-3 in 2014. Dak Prescott is still the quarterback, but during the offseason, I think he got like beat up at spring break or something, and maybe that bumped him down a few spots. I really don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts about the Mississippi State Bulldogs?
Well, they also lost like a good large percentage of their defense too, which was a large part of why they did so well last year. So I think that plays into a significant amount why they dropped. Also, of course, they were overrated last year.
I'm kind of with Logan there. I think a little bit was about the number of players they lost along with how they finished the season. They were going into the Alabama game in 2014 pretty high. I think they were either number one or number two at that point. And then from that point forward, I want to say they were like 2-2 going into like the rougher part of that schedule. So now that being said, I think that if they can show that they have the winning capability, I think Dak Prescott is actually a pretty decent Heisman candidate. So
Yeah, he certainly was one last year. So I'm all sorts of down with that. All right, so there you go. So do you guys? So this is what we're gonna do without overcomplicating it. Do you guys think they finish above or below 25th?
I'm gonna say above.
Yeah, I say above too.
Yeah, I'd probably say above.
I say above, but maybe only like two places.
Fantastic. Yeah, they got to go.
I say no less than 24th.
They got to go through the SEC West, which is no fun.
It's yeah.
They got to go through us, baby.
Oh, all right. God, y'all are on the SEC West.
Number 24. This is a team that's just kind of perennially good. Very, very few off seasons. You pretty much always see them in the Big Ten title game. And that's Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I don't know too much about them other than the fact that they're always just kind of there. Anyone got anything?
They know how to drink.
They know how to drink. They were voted like number one party school.
They got a cool marching band.
I know Melvin Gordon is gone, so therefore I don't know anything about Wisconsin.
Melvin Gordon is gone. The funny thing about Melvin Gordon is like there was a story about Melvin Gordon in Sports Illustrated, and they used a picture of his backup, not Melvin Gordon, which is like
racist
and like just
lazy.
Yeah, I mean that. I don't know how you messed that up, but that's pretty bad. All right, so there you go. So Wisconsin. All right, so I'm going to ask you guys, Wisconsin. Team that finished 11-3 last year, run oriented offensively. What? Above or below where they're ranked?
Oh, above. Easily above.
Okay. Logan?
I think above only because they're in that, only because of that conference.
It's a very cupcake
conference. I mean, yeah, like what, third in the Big Ten? So.
Yeah, I mean, like, really their main focus is going to be Ohio State. And Michigan may be all right, too. But, yeah, like they're going to go up. I don't think that they're going to be a better team than last year, but they're gonna go up from 24.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
Yeah, I think with this being Jim Harbaugh's first year in Michigan, I don't think they finish any worse than third again.
I agree. I mean, the Big Ten. I think we agree. It's a little bit easier to just kind of rally and get to the front of the line.
Yeah.
In terms of making the Big Ten title game. All right, number 23, near and dear to Elliot's heart. Now, coming off of a disappointing 8-5 season.
Who is it?
Especially disappointing because he was like the number one freshman. He was supposed to be the next Adrian Peterson.
He is the next Adrian Peterson.
Leonard Fournette didn't pan out as a freshman. An obscene amount of talent, an obscene amount of recruiting. Do the Tigers have a quarterback, and are they going to be any good this year? They are ranked 23rd. Elliot, what's the skinny?
It's the LSU Tigers specifically.
Yeah. LSU Tigers, of course.
I have looked at this a lot. I think they're going to finish 9-3. Leonard Fournette is going to have a monster of a year. They have a great O-line. They lost some people at defense, but they just sort of reload. LSU has sort of settled into the type of team that if you're a college football fan, you sort of love. Like, they're not going to win every year. They're just not. That's fine. But they're going to be fucking entertaining every year. You go to a home game at LSU, you're going to be entertained, and you're going to like what's going on. So I'd say they're going to have a pretty good year. They're going to definitely finish above 23. They're probably going to finish around 13, 12, somewhere around there. But they're going to probably lose to Alabama. But I think they beat almost everybody else on their schedule, except for Florida. I think Florida's going to beat them. Because Florida has a surprisingly good defense this year. That's really deep and that people aren't seeing coming.
Okay. You think they can beat Auburn?
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting. You have Florida as like your surprise team.
That's a sleeper.
Yeah, they're well outside the top 25.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with that. LSU has had A&M's number for the past few years, and I don't see that changing even with new staff and Chavis and all that stuff.
Chavis might have LSU's number because
maybe, but I'm on this spot right now. I have kind of what's called battered Aggie syndrome, and I am I'll believe it when I see it.
Here's what I would warn you about Chavis. Chavis needs amazing athletes for his defensive schemes to work. Because he just bets the house.
Yeah, I can see that. But at the same time, it's like we can't get much worse. I think we have a lot of talent there. We just haven't been coached and we haven't been trained properly. And I think he's the guy to do it.
He's the guy to bring it up.
Yeah.
Because like Sumlin is an offensive genius.
There are some serious growing pains when you have a big concept defensive coordinator. I don't really know Chavis's philosophy, but I think...
Actually, his is just very simple. It's it's chase the ball,
It's put the corners on islands, lock down those corners with one-on-one, have one safety back, and then just load the box.
Yeah.
That's what he does. But if your corners aren't good enough, you're fucked.
which I think some of our problems in the past at A&M has been more of an issue of we got too cutesy, we got too complicated, and our corners half the time, our defensive backs didn't know what the hell they were doing. Because,
no, they'll know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm excited about that, but at the same time, it's going to be a tough call. I think actually because we're playing at LSU, we're going to lose that game.
I don't know. Aggies can surprise you.
Trust well, me.
Plus LSU plays.
So LSU.
I'm sorry.
LSU.
I can just tell this all. I'm sorry.
We really should move on. All right, LSU, 23rd, not 22nd.
We move on when I say we're trying to move. All
right, we're still in the SEC. The Arkansas Razorbacks, 7-6 last year, have Wisconsin's coach, his old coach, Brett Bielema. A lot is expected of the Razorbacks. They pummeled Texas last year in the bowl game.
Yeah, they did.
Above or below 22nd?
Below. Arkansas.
I think below as well.
Yeah, Arkansas is fool's gold. They every year it's like, oh, this is Arkansas's year, and then every year they're just fucking disappointing.
Yeah, I can buy that.
Well, but again, this is an offensive line that had last year just like every offensive lineman was just a massive, enormous brick wall of a man.
Yeah.
Four of those guys are back.
Yeah. Still, I mean, I just...
You don't think they can be kind of like a Wisconsin South in terms of having that identity of being the punishing, bruising team that does its thing?
It depends on what Oh, go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, I think they can be. I think the only negative to it is the fact that it is a new coach. There is usually a little bit of a learning curve, and it's not that they won't be good, but the fact that they played in the SEC, I think, plays against them a little bit. So I think that's a little bit – it's not necessarily aggressive, but I think I more easily see them finishing below than I do see them finishing above.
Okay, I dig it. All right, so there you go. Arkansas, most of us think they'll finish below.
Yeah.
Because we think they'll struggle to win games. We don't see the offense.
But here's what Arkansas is going to do.
Okay.
Arkansas will fucking upset somebody way out of their class.
Oh, yeah, they're going to, like, upset an Alabama
or an
Auburn.
That's what they
LSU
do.
Or whatever.
Yeah. You're gonna have to go through Fayetteville, and you're right. Someone's not going to come out of there. Number 21, again, this is just another big program, another blue blood. But coming off of an 8-5 season, Oklahoma Sooners. Now, Bob Stoops had to kind of like redo his coaching staff. He's hired a litany of new coaches. Most importantly, he hired East Carolina's offensive coordinator, and that means an air raid style offense.
Yeah.
Curious to see how that translates into the Big 12. What do you guys think? Above or below 21 for the Oklahoma Sooners?
I mean, it should match up pretty well against, like, you know, like the Baylors and the TCUs. They'll probably do better than 8-5, and those matchups with the high scoring team should be interesting to watch.
Sensational. Yeah. The guy to watch there, his name is Samaje Perine.
It's a great name.
Rushed for 427 yards against Kansas last year. That's not a misprint.
Jesus.
That's not that impressive.
It's also not a misprint the fact that it said against Kansas.
But still, I say above. And I tell you, that air raid offense is the thing I love about college football, because when you get to the NFL, everybody's good. So you really can't just out-talent anybody. You have to out-scheme them. But, man, college, there's such a disparate difference between talent levels that you can just say, well, look, my fucking receivers are faster than your corners, and go fuck yourself and just air raid it out.
I like that. Number 20. I think this is a little bit of a grandfathering ranking. This is the first team that I'm not too crazy about this year. Again, coming off of an 11-3 season, a team that's made a lot of noise in the SEC since joining it the last few years. That's the Missouri Tigers, losing two bookend defensive end players, kind of putting a lot of stuff together. I feel like that coach has been there for way too long. The guy with the visor. I don't know his name.
Gary Pinkle.
What do you guys think? Below, above 20?
I say below.
I think that's about where they belong. They're always been a solid team. I think they'll continue to be a solid team. They're in the SEC East, which until proved otherwise is still kind of down, even with Tennessee and Georgia kind of being better this year, and Florida potentially getting up there. But I think 20 seems about right for them.
I dig it. Number 19, we're into the teens, you guys, so we should be very happy. And is everybody feeling okay while we go through this journey together? Okay, fantastic.
Yeah. Number 19. I'm sad that that there are a couple of Texas teams missing from this list here.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
UT is going to surprise some people.
Well, we're not there yet. We're not there yet. Although maybe UT's not number one.
I was going to say, we're not.
I assume they're number one.
We're not going to get there.
Number 19, the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. My goodness, this team, you know, this is the Wooderson of college football, right? That they just stay the same.
Yep.
Like, they're gonna come at you with their triple offense.
It's Paul, a flat circle.
Paul Johnson is going to just deploy it mercilessly. They've run through so many quarterbacks like Josh Nesbitt in the last few years that, like, just execute, do their thing. Now, that said, this is a team that thrashed Mississippi State in the Orange Bowl coming off of an ACC title. No, that's not true because Florida State won the ACC. Coming off of an ACC runner-up campaign.
I do remember during the ACC championship game, they gave a hell of a performance there.
Hell of a performance. Justin Thomas set a school rushing record for quarterbacks. He's only a junior. He ran for 1,000 yards as a quarterback. Triple option. You know what you're getting with Georgia Tech. I think the real question with them is, can they continue to kind of dominate a relatively down side of their conference and get to the ACC title game and repeat? What do you guys think?
Nah, they're a bunch of fucking nerds.
Bunch of fucking,
you know, nerds. I agree. Like, that school is too smart to be good at football. It's like, yo, this is what you do.
Someone ought to shove them into a locker.
Yeah.
Wait, that's...
Y'all are going to get good jobs after y'all graduate. Go fuck yourself.
So we're out on Georgia Tech. We just think, you know what? Fuck you guys.
So they're not the new Stanford is what you're saying.
And you know what? Nobody likes, like, Hornets or, like, Yellow Jackets as a mascot. Like, nobody likes it. Nobody, likes, like, a Hornet. People dislike, like, everybody likes Bears. Everybody dislikes Hornets, you know?
Actually, I do, because my high school, my hometown team was the Yellow Jackets, so.
Nobody likes it, but nobody likes Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, fuck Yellow Jackets.
All right, number 18. This is a team that, it always... Now, you want to talk about nerds that it's frustrating to see them excel because they don't seem to actually care and show up and support their damn team. That's the Stanford Cardinal, which is always singular, and it's always kind of annoying. Like, hey, we're the Cardinal. We're like a tree.
Or we're like papal. I don't know.
We're like kind of good at everything athletically, but we never really excite you or win over folks. David Shaw, one of the most exciting coaches in college football in terms of being a star on the rise, has to replace Tyler Gaffney, whom he lost to the New England Patriots. I think I might be wrong. I'm probably wrong. But Tyler Gaffney, running bell cow running back, lost him to the Pats. Finished 8-5 last year. Now they're ranked 18th. Do you guys think they can improve, take that next step in the Pac-12? Or are you guys just kind of over the Cardinal and wish they would stop being good at football?
I just think they're sort of stagnant. Like, they're not really, they're just sort of, they're gonna probably do like 9-4, 8-5. They're gonna be middling. Nothing too amazing.
More Harbaugh.
Yeah, you're not seeing the fire. You're kind of wondering if David Shaw is like kind of, I don't know.
Need more Harbaugh. Need more luck.
Need more Coach Taylor.
Just a little more. Just a little more fire. Yeah, you're right. You're not seeing the fire. But you're also just not seeing the fan base, and you can see people really checking out if things are kind of going mediocre in November. Absolutely.
And you're right. Like, a part of a college team being good is their fans being fucking crazy. Stanford fans are like, oh, it's nice when they win. But they're not, like, crying when they lose, and I'm not saying that's a good look. But that leads to, like, keeping Saban and replacing a coach when they're bad. Like, that's what replaced Mack Brown, because he was not ready to retire. They were like, we can't just keep losing like this.
Sure.
You know, I can actually see them finishing a little bit higher, only because I think one of the other teams in the Pac-12 is going to finish a little bit lower than what's initially projected.
Yeah, and you know, it's a talented team. I like that. I'm going to say they finish 19th, just a little bit lower. In any case, hey, yeah. The other thing about the Stanford fans is that, like, the band is really into it.
The band is awesome
and puts on like flair and stuff. So, you know, you're happy for the kids, I suppose. All right, Stanford, number 18, and plus it's a beautiful place. My goodness,
yeah,
man.
I lived in Berkeley for 2 years. I'm gonna stick with the East Bay.
Yeah, I suppose. All right, number 17, sticking in the Pac-12, coming off of a 10-3 season, consistently at the top of the like hottest campus girls.
Yeah, that's what you always read. That
crazy fans,
and that's and the also, Arizona State Sun Devils.
Yeah, super hot women.
They have a fifth-year senior quarterback. But still, I just don't see a defense. You know, they're going to play. They're gonna get into a shootout with kind of anybody that they play. I don't know if there's enough there to really justify the ranking. What do you guys think?
So A&M and Arizona State open up the season in Houston at Reliance Stadium, and I am looking forward to that game.
Are you going
to
be there?
I'm not going
to
be there.
Okay, good, because that's a shit show, the Reliance Stadium game.
Yeah.
I've been to that opening game, and it's horrible.
Yeah, number one, I don't know if I can take the time off or afford it, okay. But I'm going to watch the hell out of it on TV and drink a lot of beer.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of shootouts. I think they'll be a fun team to watch. And not just because I'm being sexist and talking about their student body. They should be a fun team to watch because they scored more than 50 points 3 times last year. This is a team that can air it out. Fifth-year quarterback. The guy's got a beer belly. Been there too long.
Swing away.
I dig it. I like what's going on there. All right, number 16. This is probably a team that we all unequivocally adore.
I hate them.
And we wish that they had gotten – what do you mean? No, all right. The Boise State Broncos.
I fucking hate the Boise State Broncos.
Coming off of a 12-2 season. Two-time Fiesta Bowl winners. What's not to like here, Elliot? We'll start with you.
They fucking cheat. They have these fucking loud-ass uniforms, and then they have that Smurf turf. They fucking blend into the turf. It makes it harder to cover them. They're not as good.
I don't think anyone has ever
see them from the camera.
I'm talking about as the defender. Like if you're trying to like cover, you might just miss them because I just think they cheat.
Has anybody ever made that complaint? Isn't it like has there ever been a visiting player that was like, hey man, I couldn't see these guys.
Actually, I'm pretty sure there has.
Okay.
Pretty sure that's why they do it.
Yeah. Well, guess what? How about let's talk X's and O's the entire offensive line.
Being like a Smurf racist.
I mean, it's just a team that is
guarding the Smurfs.
You want to talk about a team that sort of like
lazy.
Built the program and got into the program. Think about Ian Johnson, the running back that scored the iconic touchdown for the Boise State Broncos in 2007.
Against OU?
Against Oklahoma. I wasn't going to say it, but against Oklahoma.
I'll say it. Against OU.
Against OU. Wins the game, proposes to his girlfriend. Beautiful story. The very next season, he's fourth on the depth chart. So Boise State is a serious team with serious talent and an easy schedule. Coming off of a 12-2 season, beating teams like Georgia on the road, beating teams like Virginia Tech on the road, across the country, at FedEx Field. I don't know what else you can possibly say about this program.
They're a gimmick.
I think it's a very legit program, and I think – now, I guess the sad thing is they could go 12-2 and still finish 17th, right? So,
yep. Yeah, I was going to say this is probably about where they're going to be.
Here's the thing.
You can go beat a Georgia on the road. You can go beat a Virginia Tech on the road. But until they have to play some – like a murderer's row of teams just week in and week out, and then they do well, then come talk to me.
I mean, they're a Fiesta Bowl – they were just in the Fiesta Bowl last year. I mean,
but they take the easy way.
I think it's a legit team with a lot of good stuff going on, and I'm in on the Boise State Broncos. Adam, what about you?
No, I agree. They're a fun team. I don't know if I'd ever necessarily jump on their bandwagon, but just strictly because the conference they play in, I would say it's necessarily. It's a pretty freaking easy schedule that they have for the most part, and they do have a leg up on most of the harder competition that they do face, only because of the fact that they don't have to face top-tier competition week in and week out. But, that being said, they're always fun. For me, they're always fun to watch, and they're always fun to root for, only because they are consistently an underdog. You kind of like seeing them bitch slap people in the face, you know, when they're not expected to.
Yeah.
So I think they finish pretty much exactly where they're going to be, only because of the schedule that they have. And, you know, I think they're fine with that. I'm fine with that. It's, you know, it's whatever.
Noted. All right. Let us do like the team at number 15 and go into the no huddle offense, pick up the pace a little bit, roll through these. number 15 coming off of a 10-4 season, Anu Solomon, the redshirt quarterback of the Pac-12, tossed for 28 touchdowns. Big things expected. I don't know. I kind of feel like they'll crumble. That's just a completely baseless prediction. Anyone got anything better?
I agree.
Yeah.
Below. It just seems like I don't see Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona
in the top 15. This is just some bullshit.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know about top 15, but I think kind of like Arkansas, they're going to definitely play up to their opponents, and they're going to beat more than one person that they probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
More than one person, more than one team.
They're just going to be an upset. That's all it's going to be.
Yeah, but I think they're going to be solid, but they're going to not quite be top.
I feel that. I totally feel that. All right, number 14 again, another team with a lot of hype. Big, big, big freshman recruiting class. They snagged the number one running back in the state of Texas, Soso Jumavo. Took him out west to UCLA.
And got him arrested.
They have Snoop Dogg's son is on this team. Puff Daddy's son is on this team. This is the big Hollywood machine. But they lost Brett Hundley. Coming off of a 10-3 season, is UCLA going to be able to put it together on the field, get a cohesive starting 22, and be a top 10 team? What do you guys think?
Without Brett Hundley, nope.
Yeah.
They're going to be a disappointment. That's what UCLA is only around to beat USC and to make us feel good about beating USC. But they're not really going to do anything good.
I feel that. Logan, any dissenting opinion?
I think Hundley was important, but I think if we also judge from the game against Texas last year, they don't necessarily need Hundley to win games.
That's true. And looking at the rest of the conference again, like, this is a team that will be third in the Pac-12, so.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
All right, I feel that. Okay, number 13, this is kind of the UCLA of a couple years ago. Again, just these teams where they just had these massive recruiting classes, top 2, top 3. You're almost certain that people were getting paid under the table.
Oh, yeah.
But it kind of doesn't matter.
What?
Ole Miss.
Oh, piss.
Who told you?
Ole Miss coming off of a 9-4 season. Now, they were ranked in the top 1 or 2 during the regular season, so had some big moments. Can Ole Miss finish in the top 10, return to glory? Or are they just kind of grandfathered into this position and you kind of think they're going to crumble? I tend to think I just don't see a surefire playmaker for Ole Miss. What do you guys think?
I just think Ole Miss I agree. I think Ole Miss caught a lot of people sleeping last year. And, like, because they had been so bad for so long. I remember a few years ago there was a game against LSU where Les Miles kneeled the ball for 4 straight times on the 2 just because he was already up by, like, 40 and didn't want to rub it in. And just gave them the ball back. That's how bad they used to be. And they're decent now, but they're not going to catch anybody off guard. Like, that land shark bullshit is gone away. They're going to be decent. They're probably going to finish about 7-6. But they're not going to be anything special. They're winked way too high. And as an SEC fan, it pains me to say this, but the fact that they're ranked number 13 shows them there is an SEC bias.
I just think there's just a lot of variables. And it's just difficult. But SEC, unless I like you going into the season, I have a hard time really being convinced that you can contend seriously for the SEC. Logan?
Yeah, I think they're being ranked mostly off of talent. I think that they actually do have a really additional to, like, player talent. They have a talented coaching staff. I just haven't been convinced that it's all, like, forming together in one kind of cohesive thing yet, but...
I'm right there. Now, number 12, this is a team that is perennially exciting, has produced players like Sammy Watkins, like DeAndre Hopkins, Taj Boyd.
Woo!
Maybe not Taj Boyd. Nothing but, all right, so, So, that's Clemson, a team that has maybe one of the most charismatic players, coaches. You know they're going to be loaded. You know they're going to come into the season with a little bit of an advantage because they are a southern team, have southern talent, recruit in the South, but don't have to play an SEC schedule.
Yeah.
Kind of a deceptively tough schedule, though. Look at this. At Louisville, which is no picnic, Notre Dame, at Miami,
Jesus,
Florida State,
Jesus,
at South Carolina.
Oof.
So do we think that Clemson can put it together? Now, the good news for Clemson is that their freshman quarterback who missed – like 6 games last year is the truth. Deshaun Watson, we believe in him. We think he's going to be the guy. Do you think he's going to be the guy as a sophomore and take him into the top 10, or do you think they're going to disappoint?
I think top 10. Like, Clemson they play above their talent. Like, they always do that. I think they're going to work South Carolina, USC East. They're going to work them this year. And I think they're going to upset Florida State. Like, they're going to have a great year.
Big prediction. Big, bold prediction. JC, Logan.
I feel like if I had to guess, I don't know. I mean, based off of nothing really other than the schedule that you mentioned, I think they fall off a little bit and maybe kind of disappoint and probably fall a little lower than 12.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that they're going to end up somewhere in the 15 to 18 range in the season. Yeah. I like Clemson. I like what Dabo does there.
Dabo Swinney, their coach, great name,
yeah,
great personality. I'm kind of right. I think this is a team that we like is going to take some L's, and it's going to take just enough losses to put them out of contention, mm-hmm. and just kind of, you know, they'll go to a bowl game and represent. It'll be fun. The marching band will have a good time.
Yeah,
people.
I think they get one more win than what they're currently projected to get. But I think they finish just outside the top five, but I do think they break the top ten.
Ooh, wow. I like that. I'm gonna be conservative, side with Logan here. I do not think they're a top 10 team. All right, number 11. I don't even want to do this anymore. My God, Mark Richt, Georgia Bulldogs. You know what you're gonna get.
Yeah,
Mark Richt has lost control of his rankings.
Some good teams, some bad teams. They're not gonna win the SEC.
Nope.
We'll see you at the Capital One Bowl. We can move on. All right, number 10.
that is now our award. We can see you at the Capital
One
Bowl.
I'll see you at the Capital One Bowl. Number 10, the Oregon Ducks.
Don't forget to bring Uga.
A team that many felt was going to win the national championship last year. Certainly favored in the national championship game. Certainly seemed to break out in the Rose Bowl in that Rose Bowl semifinal against Jameis Winston in Florida State. Marcus Mariota's Oregon Ducks. He's gone. Chip Kelly's not walking back through the door, coming off of a 13-2 season. What do you guys like? Talk to me.
I mean, kind of like the Boise State thing. I mean, the sheen is going to wear off of the school at some point, and this is probably going to start to be the year you see the decline.
It's hard to wash off that much chrome.
To me, yeah. This is the year we find out whether or not the system works, or whether or not you need the players in order for the system to actually work.
The fundamental question, right? Is Oregon too big to fail? I kind of think no. I kind of think you can plug and play. No. I kind of think you can plug and play whatever in there, and Oregon is going to be top 10. I just think talent, resource, really attractive dance team,
great fans,
Pacific Northwest. I'm turning into like every horrible asshole. Well, 30-year-old man. I'm so sorry.
I don't care. You don't have to be sorry. I'm going to piggyback you. They have the hottest cheerleaders.
Come on. That's enough.
That's enough.
That's enough. This is ridiculous.
Hello, the Yell Leaders.
This is ridiculous, guys. The Yell Leaders. Yeah, let's talk about the Yell Leaders. How about some of the most handsome men in college sports today?
Everyone likes a man in uniform. All right, I'm sorry. This is the last time I'll interject A&M into.
Well, let's talk about some of the best fans. They did this song a few years ago, but they basically remixed Return of the Mac.
Okay.
And it's I Love My Ducks. And I work out to that fucking song. It's fucking great.
Okay. You can't be the best fans if your tailgate has salmon.
Salmon's awesome.
And that's not going to work.
Also, two words, Roboduck.
Yes.
Lee Corso's going to show up. Isn't Lee Corso out? Didn't he get replaced?
I thought he's still on it. He's still in.
Are you talking about the old Alabama coach? Or?
No, Lee Corso, the college game day.
I think he's still around. He's kind of on his last legs, but he's still sticking around.
Still okay. He was born in 1935.
So Jesus.
He's 79 years old, so he's not that old yet. He's not like...
That's old.
No, absolutely not. There's a big difference between your 70s and your 80s today in society.
Yeah, because, okay. He's old. He's not that old.
He's old
is 85 plus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Once you get into your mid to late 80s, like you could literally like, you know, trip and then die a couple days later. He tripped and then he's in the ER and then he had an infection and he had to die.
So it's
horrible. That should always happen.
His palms started flashing.
So the Oregon Ducks, you know, the sad thing is, I didn't realize until last night, because I had to look it up for a story, Stan Lee's like in his 90s now.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be dead. Yeah. He's going to be dead. It's going to be just a serious bummer because his work is so great and his mind is still there, still sharp as a tack.
The greatest thing about that, though, is like thinking about Stan Lee's heaven. It's just like one big strip club. Just and like everything is produced by Stan Lee.
That's beautiful. Moving on, we're inside the top 10, so this is very exciting. Number 9, this is the team that everybody kind of loves to hate for maybe some good reason.
Yeah.
The Florida State Seminoles.
Yeah.
let's start with the intangibles, right? I would argue, and in fact, we have a writer at the Daily Dot who's working on this story. Florida State has probably the most toxic, cancerous fans on the internet.
Alabama.
A little inside baseball. This reporter of ours is trying to get people to talk about, like, he has reached out to his friends in the media, other reporters, and been like, hey, I'm doing the story about Florida State Twitter, about how vile and you know.
It's a wretched hive of scum and villainy.
How awful it is. do you want to talk about it? They're like, no, I am not talking to you. Get the hell away from me.
From that sense, that is accurate. Like, Florida State fans and, like, New England Patriots fans are, like, pretty much the same kind of just awful people.
They're just like, they hate us because they ain't us.
But there's, I think Florida State's, it's considerably worse because it's, like, this, there's a little bit of this, like, backwardsness that it's just,
well, it's North Florida, anything, that's the problem.
We'll attack everything, we'll suppress, and so you get things like this James Winston. Here's the other Florida State story that I have. When I was a child in the early 80s.
When I was a small black child.
My father got offered a job at Florida State. So we almost moved to Florida State. And what convinced him to not go to Florida State was a colleague of his was like, why would you go to Florida State? That's cracker country. And that, like, that stuck with my dad. And he was like, yeah, I guess I'm not.
He's not wrong.
I guess I'm not going to go to Florida State. But look, my cousin-in-law went to Florida State. He's an awesome dude. It's an awesome school. Phenomenal colors. Great uniforms.
Also, cool as the token white guy on the podcast, I guess Adam's here too, but I take offense to that.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I think Florida State's awesome.
Adam's actually half Hispanic, so there you go. Fair enough. So you are the token.
Well, growing up with a black father, I've heard that term very many times.
I think Florida, but it's not even. This is absolutely not a race issue. This is a fan base issue. This is an issue of people that will defend the institution and die on the cross.
Yeah,
almost as bad as Penn State. I mean, you have the Penn State thing. You know, like Penn State, I think has outed itself as like the worst fan base in America.
Yeah,
very. You know, you're talking about a coach that like defended.
A child fucker,
and like was like, hey man, I know you're fucking some kids. I can't deal with this right now.
I don't want to see it.
But here's what I can do for you. I know you're fucking some kids. What we're gonna do is just let this quiet down, and then I'll give you an office on campus, and then you know I'll look
the
other way. And we'll
help you keep on doing that.
We'll just facilitate the fucking the kids. Let's just keep it on the hush. I know you're in the prime of your coaching career right now. You're in your 40s. Everybody thinks that you should be my successor, but I know about the kid fucking. So what I'm gonna do is we're just gonna put a pin in it for now,
so to speak,
and we're gonna circle back. And like that happens, and then everyone's like, Joe Pa,
don't take away my football.
Don't take away Joe Pa. It's
they shouldn't even be able to play football anymore.
Well, they quietly can go to bowl games now. Yeah. It is reprehensible, but that's neither here nor there. Florida State, to their credit, no fucking kids that we know of. No,
back on track.
Well, give Jameis
back
Winston
on track.
Give Jameis Winston some time.
Let's talk about the game. This is a team that's coming off of a semifinal loss, 13-1 season though, one loss in two seasons. And they got themselves a pretty damn good quarterback. Everett Golson transferred from Notre Dame.
I'm sure that didn't help the perception of people not liking them.
completely loaded.
And a good coach. No matter what, Jimbo Fisher was a good coach.
I think this is the big yeah but thing for this team. The quarterback's going to play. The running back's going to run. The receiver's going to catch.
Yeah, cheats.
How about four new starters on the offensive line?
Oof.
So are they a top 10 team, or are they a team that is grandfathered into the top 10 based on recent performance? What do you guys think?
Grandfathered.
Yeah. They're more of a top 15 team.
I think that they still deserve to be there. It's the fucking preseason, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know. Like they still have enough talent there. They have a good enough coach. They have good enough facilities. They have enough momentum to keep that stuff going. Are they going to win the national championship this year? Probably not. Most likely not. But they're still in the conversation for top 10, I think.
Yeah, I feel that. Number 8, the USC Trojans, a team that is completely, I would argue maybe outside of one or two teams, the most talent, like I would say top 4, top 5 in talent. here's the issue. Are they going to break out? This is a quarterback, a senior quarterback, Cody Kessler, who threw for 39 touchdowns and only 5 interceptions. Now he's a senior. You're seeing the leadership, a team that's loaded with like perennial top 2, top 3 at their position nationwide in the 2013-2014 high school season. So they're now sophomores. People like Juju Smith, Adoree Jackson. All right, USC, you guys in, you guys out. Adam, I heard a dissenting no already. What do you guys think?
Well, I'm in. Like, I think USC has a big chip on their shoulder from, like, you know, all that Pete Carroll stuff. They've sort of been – that sort of threw their entire program for a loop. And this feels like the first year that they're sort of over that and they can actually just start going for it. Like, I think they're going to – I think they're going to shock some people. I think they're going to have a really great year.
I don't know. There's the way in which some people are bring up the SEC bias, and people are talking about how the Pac-12 is going to be the most dominant conference this year. Well, in order for that to happen, USC has to finish better than 8th. And looking at the teams that are ahead of them, maybe they can finish like in the top 6.
But, Notre Dame,
but they might be a little bit better than 8th. But I don't think they're going to end up. They might sniff the playoffs, but that's about it.
I like it. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think USC stuff, because USC will be contending for a Pac-12 title late, but it's too early to tell if it's a team that has the goods to really get there. All right, number 7, a team that we probably know a lot about because they've just been good and good and good and keep getting better, and they seem to be really building something special, and that's Mark D'Antoni. Nope, that's the basketball coach. Mark D'Antonio's Michigan State Spartans. Again, 11-2 last year, but more pertinently, this is a team that won the Rose Bowl 2 years ago, and last year, even more impressively, goes down to Texas, pushes Baylor around, and beats Baylor in the Cotton Bowl. A lot to build off of. Senior quarterback Connor Cook is the man right there. He is, Sports Illustrated, this isn't me, he's being projected as a potential first-round pick next year. A lot of really good things going on with Michigan State. Is this a team that you guys can think can really turn that corner and get to the playoffs? Or is this a team that is kind of destined to be one step behind Ohio State?
I don't know, but I think we can all get behind the idea of Baylor getting kicked around.
Yeah, I think yes. We all like that. We all like that, too. We don't need another, like, we already got an Oregon college football. We don't need another one.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think they're just sort of going to they're going to be fine, and they're going to make some noise, but in the end, they'll do what Michigan State always does and lose the big game.
That's true. They did. They lost a very big game in November to Ohio State last year, and that was, you know, it's hard to imagine. I think Michigan State, you know, if Michigan State was in another conference, you'd feel pretty, like, I do think this is a fantastic team that has a lot of good things going on. I don't see them. I can't see them being bad, but they get Ohio State at home.
Yeah.
That being said, I still don't see them beating Ohio State, but you know what? I see Michigan State being almost exactly in the same position they were last year.
And like, unless Gerald Butler shows up and plays for Sparty, I don't think they're going to have a chance.
And I misspoke. They're traveling to Ohio State again. Or maybe
they definitely finish exactly where they so,
lost. And now that I think about it, the game may have been at home. So maybe they lost to Ohio State at home last year. And that was kind of the moment that anybody that was watching college football was like, man, Ohio State might actually be kind of good.
Yeah.
Might actually be, like, very legit.
They peaked at the right time.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is a whole other can of worms.
Yeah.
All right, so number 7. So we think we just can't really see Michigan State turning the corner. I agree with you guys. All right, number 6. Now, this is a team that is still in the top 10. Team that less than a decade ago was the laughingstock and the cellar of the Big 12. And now Waco, Texas, with that Lane Cook Stadium. Is that Lane Cook? Was it my McLean?
McLean
Stadium. I don't.
It's Lane, a beautiful stadium.
Beautiful stadium on the river, kind of like the San Francisco Giants Stadium a little bit, but like less scenic.
And it's also on 35,
right off of I-35.
it's no 18th.
It's the kind of thing that, like, yeah, you, like, I don't know. It's like right off the Motor Mile. All right,
off the worst highway in America.
Your Baylor Bears, 11-2. Metallic helmets, Art Briles, everyone's favorite drunk uncle complaining about the selection committee, complaining about conspiracies. But a lot of talent, a lot of good things here. How about sophomore receiver KD Cannon, who's coming off of a 1,000-yard freshman
His name is Katie. Season.
How about senior wideout Jay Lee, who's averaging 15.4 yards per catch? Now, that is lifted verbatim from the Sports Illustrated article, so I'm not pulling that. I'm not going off the dome. I just want to be very clear. All right, guys.
Also, I don't know if we actually said, did we say that this is the Sports Illustrated top 25, not the coaches poll?
It is the Sports, we're saying it now. Yeah.
We are clarifying now. Yeah. This is the sport. All right. Now,
what are you, my dad?
This is another thing that I have to read verbatim from Sports Illustrated. Maybe not verbatim, but it's an important nugget to relay. How about a 392-pound tight end?
Jesus.
Laquan McGowan.
Is the mountain playing for them?
So, all right, I'll ask
dude,
you guys again.
Dude now, looks scary.
All Baylor has to do is win the Big 12, and Baylor is in the top four.
I think Texas beats them.
You think Texas beats Baylor? So you guys think Baylor takes enough L's to DQ from the yep. top four?
Yeah, I think. Well, I mean, the Big 12 is probably going to try to pull the shenanigans of trying to sneak two guys into the playoffs again. But yeah, it's probably not going to work.
One true champion.
The only thing that concerns me about Baylor is that Bryce Petty is now gone as well. So with the great wide receivers that you're talking about, I don't know exactly who it is that may be throwing to them.
Yeah, I completely agree. I just think there's a very defined ceiling for Baylor, and that's sixth place. All right, we're inside the top five right now. We're gonna run through this. Alabama again. You want to talk about repeating what we've seen in the past? No Amari Cooper, no T.J. Yeldon. Yes, less of an exciting team. Their quarterback is senior Jake Coker, who transferred in from Florida State. Kind of like Blake Sims, you know, just kind of like a guy that they're plugging in late into his eligibility.
But that's what Saban does.
Does Alabama have – no, A.J. McCarron was a three-year starter. All right, does Alabama have the special herbs and spices to dominate its way into the playoff once more?
I think it does. Like, Saban, they're going to be in the playoffs. Like, they're going to – their line is just too big on both sides of the ball to even think about losing a game until they get to the playoffs.
I'm going to disagree just because I think that the SEC West in particular has improved quite a bit this year, and there's going to be a lot more speed bumps than even they've encountered in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I don't really see where, but I can pencil in probably three losses for Alabama.
Yeah, the three may be iffy, but I could definitely see that. I mean, it's like I think that there's potential to lose to LSU. There's potential to lose to A&M. There's potential to lose to Arkansas. There's potential to lose to Mississippi.
Auburn.
Auburn. Yeah,
you know what? I think this is kind of the same kind of year that maybe they had last year, and that you can see a lot of games in which they can lose. I think until proven otherwise, Saban loses no less than or no more than two games.
Yeah,
and two is the cap kind of thing.
I'd say three is the cap, but two is more likely. Of
course. I think two is the cap. Once he gets to that three level, then I think he kills himself.
But. Yeah, Saban does not do well with losing that man.
But if there's one thing that Alabama has going for
it, he gets strung up by the fan base.
Yeah,
I don't see like a particularly dominant team in the SEC this year. I see a lot of loaded teams that are going to need a little bit of work, and I think Alabama is just as good as anybody at getting them ready. I'm kind of with Logan on this one though. All right, and number four, and this is probably a team the most surprising addition to the top 25 because this is a team that was completely destroyed by USC last year, then saw its quarterback transfer to Florida State, but does have 18 returning starters and opens the season with your Texas Longhorns. Notre Dame Fighting Irish coming off of an 8-5 season. Come on, guys. Are we serious? Is Notre Dame a team that – now, here's what Notre Dame has. Notre Dame runs its table or finishes with one loss. It is very likely that it's going to get into that playoff because it is Notre Dame. Still, is this a team that can – the real question for Notre Dame, if you're a Notre Dame fan, is can you get through that schedule with one loss?
They're going to lose to Texas.
It can be a lot like last year, people gave me crap for it, but as while Florida State was kind of running through the table – I was like, I mean, look at the numbers they're putting up. Look at how they're performing. They're not a top four team. And everybody's like, but they're the defending champions. I'm like, but they're not a top four team. And sure enough, they got smoked in the playoff. And so, yeah, I think if Notre Dame runs the table or ends up with one loss, the voters will be like, yeah, put them in.
Yeah.
And
but it, why? Like, well, Notre Dame.
But come on. This is not the why discussion. This is the let's be adults, and this is college football. Notre Dame is a power.
But I don't.
But why? Perennial power?
They're perennial power because they're an institution with an enormous fan base and an ability to recruit a great amount of talent, and they have a great coach. All right. Let's take a look at the schedule. Let's go inside the numbers here. Georgia Tech, Clemson, Stanford, the only teams that are in the top 25. They play Navy at home, play Texas at home. A game that, oh, by the way, I'll be there. I'm going to Texas Notre Dame.
Oh, nice.
You're going to South Bend, Indiana?
Yeah, I'm going to Chicago and then driving to South Bend. So I'm really excited about it. All right. Is this the year?
ITL live broadcast. What?
Yeah.
I'm always up for that.
I expect a Periscope of it.
I'll be Periscoping. I'll be live tweeting.
I just live tweeted something from this
think
podcast.
Notre Dame's schedule is light enough for them to get into the top four. I just can't see them. I really see Notre Dame losing one game and parachuting into the top four. Does anybody disagree?
I do see them losing one game. I also see them not getting into the top four.
Yeah.
No. Okay. I feel that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, no, I understand.
Yeah, I see them not losing any more than one of those games, but I don't know. You know what? Notre Dame does have that sex appeal where I can see them sort of. I can see if there are a lot of one-loss teams in the country by the time that comes around that they may squeak into the top four, but I do see them losing one game, but I also see them not in a play.
Sure. I feel that. All right. 3-2-1. I just want to run through this very, very quickly because, you know, we're just familiar with these teams. Number three, TCU, a team that did almost enough to get into the national championship.
Purple Baylor.
That's great.
Did its thing. Number two, the Auburn Tigers.
Auburn.
Which this is the one that of all of these, I think, baffles me the most.
Yeah.
How can Auburn be number two? Yes, they have Will Muschamp. Yes, they have Malzahn. But come on, they're going to be a good team, but they're not going to be number two in the frickin' nation.
And they're coming off of an 8-5 season.
Yeah.
A lot of question marks, yeah. Which I think speaks to how wide open it is. And then number one. Now, I think in a year that is very wide open, one thing will ring very true, and that is that the Ohio State Buckeyes, loaded, deep at every position, I don't see them being seriously challenged in the Big Ten.
No.
And I think Ohio State is right back where they finished the season.
Urban Meyer has done an amazing job.
Incredible job.
Oh, he's going to rival Nick Saban as best coach of this era.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, these things are cyclical, and it's beginning to go away from the SEC to the Big Ten.
No,
yeah.
And you said the right word. When it comes to college football, cyclical is the word. Like, you have to recruit. It's all about, like, building your infrastructure, recruiting, getting the facilities. And, like, right now, Ohio State's talent is just maturing.
Mm-hmm.
And Alabama's going – they're still great, but they're going through a bit of a stagnant phase. And it's like, right now, Ohio State's the team to beat.
Yeah. No, that
– and now Brex Miller's going to be an H-back, so
– I think – I mean, if there was – a vote to go on right now of top coaches in college football for me, and not just because it's fresh on the memory, but I think I would give it to Urban Meyer over Nick Saban.
Mm-hmm.
Only because of his ability to succeed in multiple conferences.
Yeah.
And
well, but again, you know, with all due respect to places north of the Mason-Dixon, part of Ohio State's success taps into the fact that they have a lot more of a cushion and a lot more of a weaker conference. And the proof in that is that Urban Meyer's recruiting players from the South and from Texas. Yeah. And, you know, they ran through a big chunk of their schedule with a quarterback from Texas. So, yeah, Ohio State is a team that is a force largely because they can bring SEC football with those Ohio State resources and really dominate their region. Now, it's going to be really exciting to see what Jim Harbaugh does in the next few years, if Michigan State can contend. I think the Big Ten is set up to have a really fantastic renaissance here. But the fact remains that Ohio State right now is in a class by itself. I think they would very easily be the most talented team in the SEC if they had to play an SEC schedule. So that's what we got. All right. We went through the top 25. Now, what I want from you guys, I don't want a champion yet. It's a little too early for that. But I want you to tell me, based on what you know and what we've learned tonight, who your top four teams for the playoff are.
Ooh. Top four. How about we just do top three and just go around?
Yeah, top three. All right, I like that. I mean, I think it'll be very clearly Ohio State, Notre Dame. Go ahead and pencil them into the playoff. Then we'll throw in the SEC champion because there's so much respect for the SEC. And then it's a complete wild card, but I'm going to take USC because I think USC has a great deal of talent. So that's who I have getting into the top four. Ohio State, USC, Notre Dame, and SEC champ, which will say Alabama.
I got Ohio State, SEC champ, USC, and the surprise of the year. I don't even like this team that much, even though I went to their graduate school. I think Texas is going to have a great year. And I think they're going to be in the championship.
What?
That is
wow.
Not
that's aggressive.
Going to happen. It would be, but why the hell not?
You know, LA, we've been meaning to talk to you about your drinking before coming.
It is a little late. I am tired.
JC, where you at?
Go Ohio State, USC, TCU.
All right, and Adam.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Ohio State, TCU, and I think you really do have to get that SEC championship team in there. Man, it's always hard to vote against Nick Saban. God, you know what? To me, the SEC West, I think this year is maybe for more than most other years, I think it's kind of a wash. But I think because it's Saban, I'm going to go. Yeah, I'm going to say Ohio State, TCU, Alabama. And then that fourth is kind of a wild card for me.
Texas.
I'm going to say it kind of depends a little bit on how Michigan State plays against Ohio State. And I'm going to say a little bit. I'm going to say I can see Notre Dame getting in, but it really kind of does depend on what the records are for the rest of the teams and the rest of the teams in the nation at that point in time.
Okay, sensational. All right, guys. Now, that took way longer than we anticipated. Jesus Christ.
Much longer. That's podcast, guys.
Thank you for listening. So we're going to – Logan, what's our time? How long have we been going on?
We've been going for like 45, 50 minutes.
Okay, so that's not terrible just yet.
Yeah.
We have a solid like 20 minutes left. All right. We promised this talk. This is important. We're going to talk fantasy football. We're going to talk the wide receiver position right now. And we've all been drinking heavily, so please bear with us. But – it's very important to note that what you do at receiver this year, I think, for my money, is the most important thing you can do with your draft.
Yep.
Because you need big point-producing players, especially if you are in a points-per-reception league, which I think at this point is about most of them.
Sort of standard.
But Ramon, what about quarterback?
Let's not open up that kind of wars. So this is what I'm advocating. So, okay. I want to ask you guys, who is – give me a receiver that you cannot wait to draft. Give me a receiver that is off your board because you just don't think he's – you think he's not going to repeat what he did last year. And give me a receiver that you think is going to, you know, break out and be the man. And then also give me your philosophy. So, for example, I will start while you guys think about that. I know I threw a lot at you guys. I think that this year, if you are in a PPR league – it is very wise to invest your first 2 to 3 picks on receivers. I think if you're picking toward the middle bottom of the first round and you have an opportunity to get players like, and especially with me, I love big, tall receivers. I'm a big and tall guy. So Demaryius Thomas, Dez Bryant, Julio Jones, any one of those three in the first round, you're picking toward the bottom of them. They're going to be there. Go and get them.
Yeah.
When you pick in the second round, he's going about 16 overall right now in most redraft leagues. And that's Megatron. That's Calvin Johnson. That's the lowest average draft position that he has had in more than 5 years because everyone's had him on their team and everyone's just kind of bored with Calvin Johnson.
They forgot about Dre.
He was hurt last year.
That's the best way to put it I think I've ever heard.
I think Calvin Johnson is a severe value because if you can get him in the second round and pair him with really anything – then you've got yourself a first-round player. What that means, though, unfortunately, is that I am taking people off my board that I loved having them last year, but this year don't like what I have to pay to get them. And that's Antonio Brown of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think Martavis Bryant, I think there's too many weapons there. I think he's going to continue to be fantastic, but I don't love the price tag. That means I'm taking off Odell Beckham Jr.
What?
He's only 5'11", you guys. I'm 5'11". I don't want a 5'11 receiver.
So obviously we're the same.
Victor Cruz is healthy. Andre Williams is a breakout running back.
See, like, I'm learning more and more about your approach each week. You have a very numbers based
approach. I need a big receiver, man. I need to go to the big and tall store for my receivers, man. I'm not getting a 5'11 receiver, Odell Beckham. I'm not getting a 5'10 receiver.
Because he had a bad year last year.
Antonio Brown. He was the breakout rookie of the year. Whatever. I'm just not excited about it. And the other guy that I think is perennially fantastic and one of the best in the league, and that's Jordy Nelson. I think you have to bet on health. You have to bet on production. And I loved Jordy Nelson last year as a second and third rounder. Don't love him this year. So again, what I'm advocating, what I've done, first round Dez Demaryius or Julio, second round Calvin Johnson or AJ Green if you can do it. Again, big, tall, sexy receiver, broad shoulders, winning smile. And
that will hold you just right.
Here's what I want. If you're in a 12-team league or a 10-team league, what I want you to do is in the third round, or even if you have to move up and get him in the second round, lock down DeAndre Hopkins, because he is the type of player that posts, that is immune to whoever's throwing him the ball and can catch 10 catches and 3 touchdowns in a game. Gets to play teams like the Tennessee Titans and the Colts twice that have just very kind of porous passing defenses, and is really set to break out and be the guy. Next year, you won't be able to get him in the second round or in the first round, and especially if you guys have keeper leagues. DeAndre is my guy this year. That's how I'm doing it. Certainly, everything that I just said about DeAndre Hopkins, you can go ahead and slide over to Mike Evans as well.
I'm curious about a guy like... I seem to bring up the Bears a lot because even though I don't have regional preferences, I do kind of like the city of Chicago, and so I kind of gravitate towards the Bears and the Cubs in baseball. I like Alshon Jeffries. Yeah, I like Alshon. I think it's going to be an interesting year, his first year without Brandon.
I agree. I mean, Alshon is the guy, right?
And Alshon's a big, tall dude. Throw it up there, he can go get it.
They were happy to let. And coming out of South Carolina, had a just all the measurables were there, and had a first-round grade. Bears got him in the second, plugged him right in, paid dividends. There's really no reason why Alshon Jeffrey isn't going to be consistent and fantastic this year. And if you can get him in the second round, feel really good about that.
See, I got to go with the one I think is going to have a great year, contrary to Ramon, is Odell Beckham Jr. I think he's going to just have another great year, a good LSU guy. He's gonna light it up again. The one other thing's gonna have a disappointing year is Victor Cruz. I think he's been replaced. I think he's gonna be the second option, and he's gonna be an option that is gonna get a little bit in his head. And he's not gonna do as well. But the option I think is gonna really break out, and be amazing this year is Mike Evans. Mike Evans is gonna be great this year because
he's still mine.
Isn't Jameis Winston like his quarterback now?
Yeah.
They're gonna just light it up.
It's the tandem right there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about another guy that has an opportunity to just vastly outperform where you get him. Right now, he is by far the most valuable third-string receiver in the NFL, and that's Davante Adams from the Packers. He's big, burly.
Sexy,
muscle mass everywhere.
He knows how to hold you just right.
Large cock.
Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson are just about bulletproof.
He's got a large Randall Cobb.
even if Cobb and Nelson are there all season, Davante Adams is incredibly productive and a great option to have in that passing offense.
I think we've practically named almost every single top-tier wide receiver that there is. The only one that I would think that I would add to the list would be, only because the offense that they play in and the quarterback is going to be throwing to him, would be T.Y. Hilton. I think he's going to get a lot of looks, and I think he's going to get a lot of attention from opposing cornerbacks and opposing defenses. But I think that with Reggie Wayne gone and not much else in that offensive side aside from adding a few a few running backs to that backfield. I think T.Y. Hilton is going to get a lot of attention from Andrew Luck in that offense. I think the other wide receiver who I may have kind of a breakout year, kind of depending on it, I guess kind of depending on how the quarterback situation plays out, would be Sammy Watkins. Mike Evans, I think, has the bigger upside of that receiver class, and you know, Odell Beckham definitely had the bigger breakout year. But Sammy Watkins, having been injured for most of his rookie season and not having a big quarterback or a big name quarterback to throw to him, I think could be a kind of a sexy flex position player, which is kind of where I drafted him last year. If he stays healthy, I think he could be that. He would definitely be a good, productive number one receiver, but definitely is that good sort of intermediate. I don't know how he's going to be, only because I don't know how the quarterback position is going to be. But I can see Sammy Watkins getting open a lot, just off of his talent alone.
Yeah, it's pretty much how I felt and why I drafted him last year. It's just, but when it came to this year, it's like I don't know who's going to throw it to him. Like,
So I'm off. I'm definitely hearing. I'm kind of surprised because no one has yet mentioned Dez Bryant, and I'm especially surprised because.
And I think it's only because Dez, you know, the Dez, Demaryius, Julio Jones, Megatron sort of situation is kind of like there's a top five, and I think it's pretty set in stone.
Yeah, they're kind of obvious.
Dez Bryant's, it's always the receivers who are they're the bigger, faster receivers who are legitimately number one receivers on their own offense kind of thing. And it's Dez, Demaryius, Megatron, Julio Jones, and AJ Green. And if anybody else has a top five they can think of besides that.
No, absolutely. No, I should have mentioned, yeah, Dez for me is my number one option at receiver. I think he's going to be, you know, everything you want and more. I think he finishes with more production than Demaryius Thomas and Julio Jones. I think Dez is, for me, the very clear-cut number one receiver. Again, Dez, Demaryius, and Julio are the three that I'm targeting in round one, hoping to land Megatron in round two, and then going after DeAndre Hopkins in round three, and then just feeling good, and then just flexing out.
Yeah, and I tell you, I've been learning something these last few weeks from Ramon. I'm going to, like, from here on out, I'm going to make sure to pick my wide receiver first. And because, like, it seems like that's the crucial position that It's sort of rare. It's like you can get a lot of good points built in, but your running backs can get your points. Your quarterbacks can get your points. If you can get a fundamentally good wide receiver, not even in the top tier, but just two wide receivers that will consistently week in and week out get you good points, you're already ahead of the game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not an overall thing, right? Like if you have the number one overall pick, I think you kind of have to go for, because the most rare players are those like 2 to 4. Very elite running backs. But yeah. After that, receiver.
So, like, that also really depends, again, on your league and the scoring system. One of my other leagues that I joined with a bunch of my college friends, I only after the draft did I realize that it was an extremely favorable to quarterbacks. And so, you know, of course, I drafted that same way. And then because I'm trying to remember who I had, I think I ended up with like Ryan Tannehill as my starter or something like that.
Oh.
But I also had Megatron and I had Arian Foster and stuff like that. And I still just got destroyed every game just because it was so, it leaned so hard on quarterbacks in that scoring system.
But that's
so,
a bad league then.
Well, I mean, like it just depends. Like you have to pay attention to those things before you do it. But if we're talking about a standard scoring system, yes. But I also like I learned a very important lesson that year that I need to be paying attention very closely to the scoring system that's set up and understand where it differs from standard leagues.
And that's good advice. You got to see the rules so you can take advantage of them.
Yeah.
I am glad that Logan mentioned the player that he just mentioned. Only because it plays into who Ramon mentioned earlier on, was DeAndre Hopkins. The fact that Arian Foster had the groin injury that he just suffered during training camp this past week, kind of, that's something I think that I pay more attention to during the offseason than more than anything else, is the health of the other players on that given offense. With Houston not being a high scoring team to begin with, and the majority of that scoring offense coming from Arian Foster to begin with, if that's a team that's having to play catch up a lot, there are a lot of junk points that can be earned like in the third and fourth quarter just by playing catch up. that DeAndre Hopkins kind of plays into, that were in most seasons, if they are having to rely on the production of Arian Foster going into the third and fourth quarters, because they're actually in the game, if they're playing a lot of catch up, you can get a lot of value in a team that's historically bad. Like, they lose a lot of games and they're having to constantly throw the ball a lot in the third and fourth quarters. And I think that's kind of where that could possibly be where Houston falls into with this coming up year, with Arian Foster being out of the offense.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, just a couple of, you know, put them on your do not on the no fly list, right? A couple of receivers that I would advise not taking because of their price and because I don't think they're going to produce based on where you get them. Vincent Jackson, still in Tampa Bay, kind of a lame duck.
Yeah.
Mid to late 30s now. He's going off the board in the top 20 of receivers based on name recognition. We have no idea what his rapport with Jameis Winston is going to be like, but we do know that the running back will be better. We do know that they have more of a sandbox for Winston to play with.
And he was very disappointing last year.
Absolutely. A couple of stalwarts in new places: Andre Johnson in Indianapolis, Brandon Marshall with the Jets, Mike Wallace with the Vikings, Jeremy Maclin with the Chiefs. All those guys I'm crossing off the list.
Yeah.
A lot of variables. I don't see a transcendent talent outside of Brandon Marshall to really instantly plug and play. And again, with Brandon Marshall still being drafted as a top 20, top 25 receiver, just don't love the price tag.
Who's throwing to him?
Right, exactly. Yeah. I just don't like what you have to pay. Jarvis Landry, LSU player, a lot of talent in Miami. I don't love what Miami's doing.
Yeah.
I don't see that talent. But again, two players that I love that I think are being overlooked a little bit in value, and these guys are all ranked below them: Allen Robinson from the Jaguars, who's basically built like Dez Bryant; Eric Decker from the Jets, who's a very good in real life receiver, who's a very good garbage time receiver, who became a top — and think about this — Eric Decker being drafted outside of the top 30, he put up top 15 production with Tim Tebow as his quarterback. He's good whenever he's on the field. He's a good player, and that translates. How about Breshad Perriman, a very strong candidate for Rookie of the Year, filling in for Torrey Smith, and you can get him several rounds after Torrey Smith. How about you heard me talk about Devontae Adams. My man Adam likes T.Y. Hilton. I'm with you right there. I really like the Indianapolis passing game. Here's a guy that I think is going to outproduce Andre Johnson, who, again, is being drafted 20 spots lower, and that's Dante Moncrief. I think he's big, talented, young, rapport.
Had some moments last year.
Dante Moncrief, a much better option, I think, than Andre Johnson. And lastly, and this is just a player that just does not show any signs of slowing down, still good, a great third receiver, great flex option, and that's Anquan Boldin. I just don't think he's done anytime soon. And lastly, three exciting guys to get late: Doriel Green Beckham from the Titans, incredible talent. I don't know how much you're going to get out of him as a rookie, but if you're in a keeper league, great guy to target.
It's a good speculative pick. Like, you want to pick those that maybe not work out, but maybe they do.
Yeah,
and you get an Odell Beckham Jr. just randomly.
Totally. And then if you're in a redraft league, I'm digging Brian Quick. I think he's going to be the best receiver in St. Louis, has a chance to be the number one receiver on his team, and you're getting him outside of the top 50 for receivers. Great value. And lastly, this is just a guy. He's a bomb specialist, does good stuff when he gets the ball. He's going to get more action this year because there's no DeMarco Murray, and that's Terrence Williams of the Dallas Cowboys. So there you go. That's my spiel. You guys got anything to add?
I thought you were talking about Jeremy Renner just there when you said bomb specialist.
Oh, I love Jeremy Renner. Fantastic bomb specialist.
My sleep reflex option would only be Steve Smith with Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
Only because I don't see him. I mean, at his age, I don't see him slowing down. And if he's available in those later rounds, I'm probably going to get him.
I'm pretty sure Penny didn't like that pick.
Apologies for my dog talking over your lines. Getting her bark on right there. All right, guys. I think, this is probably this is the last thing we'll talk about. We'll just touch on this very lightly.
Yeah.
Shutting this down. John Stewart. is no longer the host of The Daily Show by the time you're listening to this.
It's so hard.
It's kind of a bummer. To say goodbye. To be frank, like, I didn't watch the last couple of months, but, you know, Stuart's the man. We wanted to talk a little bit about things that you felt, you know, because he is leaving, we think, at the right time.
Yeah.
And it's really, really hard to get that. It's really hard to land that. So maybe talk a little bit, fellas, about people in sports that left at just the right moment.
It's so hard to leave at the right moment because, like, if you're in sports, you're there because you're competitive and you believe in yourself. You have an amazing amount of confidence, and it's what you've known your entire life. So that it's so hard to get that right. I mean, the best player in basketball of all time retired twice. Like, that's a problem, but that was the same thing that led Michael Jordan to retire when he didn't need to.
Are you talking about Michael Jordan?
I will hurt you.
I thought you were talking about Kobe.
Oh!
You said the best of all time. I thought you were talking about
Kobe. You're a nice guy, but I'm done with you professionally. Kobe, fuck. Oh.
All right.
You broke my brain.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. All right, so Jordan.
Obviously, the only thing negative about Michael Jordan is the fact that he didn't know that he was supposed to have stayed retired twice.
Yes. It's just like, dude, we get it. You want to keep playing, but you need to just stop.
Technically, he retired at the right time one time and the wrong time twice.
Yes.
Only because the second time disproved the first time, and the third time proved correctly the second time.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, the third time, he had this, like, he came back and he was playing for the Wizards. That season, he had this one block, and I forgot who it was on, where he basically ripped the ball off the backboard. Most impressive block I've ever seen in my life. Like, it was amazing. Yeah. So he could still play, but it's just, you know, it's hard to put yourself, to take yourself out of the situation and go, you know what? I can still play, but I want to leave right now on top. So in terms of the guy who left on top, that's a hard question.
I liked Jerome Bettis's.
Oh, yeah. Super Bowl 40.
Yeah.
Beating the Seahawks 21-10 or whatever that game was. Mm. I love that.
Yeah, I think that was a good one.
I'm with JC. My pick was John Elway.
Mm.
I mean, you go out with – you've been to the Super Bowl. I can't remember in John Elway's case. It was two times or three times before that. Gotten your ass kicked. And just not going out on – not just going out on top, but going out on – going out on top twice.
Like, oh, yeah.
Back-to-back Super Bowls, I don't think you can get any better than that.
No, and, you know, Elway lost three of them in the 80s to what is it?
It was
New York, Washington, and San Francisco. And then back-to-back Super Bowls to go out, and all of a sudden you go from, like, maybe top 15 all-time to, like, top two or three all-time. Yeah, top five.
Less than top 10, more than likely top five.
I love that. Logan, you got anything?
I'm terrible at picking stuff like this. I'm actually going to say Mike Modano.
Yeah, Dallas Stars.
Yeah. I think I grew up in the Dallas area, and he was kind of the guy that got me into the Stars, and so I followed him all his career. And maybe I'm kind of – maybe people will disagree with me on this, but I think that the guy just kind of – got out at the right time, and it just was kind of, you know, basically retire a legend. You know, he's just a badass dude, and I still respect him for it. So,
okay. I love it.
And I got Magic Johnson.
Okay,
because he had some tumultuous way to exit. But if you remember, I'm trying to be nice. He basically fucked his way through Hollywood. And ended up with it.
Who hasn't?
Just like, because like that's what happened. But he had to leave the NBA. But he came back and played on the best team that has ever been assembled in any sport ever, in the Dream Team. And he was sort of the leader of that team for a good bit. It's sort of where he handed the torch off to Jordan and said, "Look, this is your league now." Bird and Johnson sort of, that was their last hurrah, and he got a really nice send off, and he left there. He left that's. To be a part of that team and to be leading it.
I'm sorry. I would like to change my answer.
If Magic Johnson left on top, or if he left because the woman was on top.
On that note.
Yeah.
That.
Well, so my guy left with grace, dignity, class, on top. Couldn't have been nicer about it. All sorts of fan support. at just the right moment, was not overblown at all. How about Brett Favre?
What?
Oh, you're going for the ironic pick.
Yeah, I was like, I thought you were serious for a second.
But to be frank, at the time, I wanted more and more Brett Favre. I think people...
And so did that reporter.
I think... No, she wanted less and less Brett Favre. Brett Favre sexually harassed her.
Oh, that's right. That's a horrible joke.
That's wanted, terrible.
Sorry. I mean, I love the Brett Favre. Like, you know, I just give me more Brett Favre stories. Give me more, like, him exposing himself to sideline reporter stories. Give me more,
that's
like...
That's terrible. Again, it's good.
Those are great stories, made media so interesting.
He's a good old boy.
And at the end of the day, Brett Favre was so, like, vendetta-driven against the Packers that he, like, went to the Vikings. He was like, well, you know what? I'm going to the Vikings. Fuck you. Like, gave the Vikings, like, the best season they've had this century. Just, like, on the low. And then, to top it all off, lost the NFC Championship with that, like, just unbelievably... poorly
he became
timed
Favre.
Aaron throw.
Very Brett Favre play.
Yeah, very Brett Favre.
It was so funny. It was like, you know, I remember, it's funny because it's the second week in a row that we're mentioning her, but during the Caitlyn Jenner ESPN speech, you know, there was that kind of awkward shot of Brett Favre in the audience, and one of the pictures going around Twitter was
weighing out.
Was of like Brett Favre, and it was like, caption this. And someone wrote, you know what's really brave? Seeing your man covered by three people and still throwing it. And that was Brett Favre's career, so I enjoy that so much. And anyway, all right, so there you go. Guys, that's our show, Inside the Locker. Come with us inside the locker. Now, I tell you what, real quick, you guys, because it's back. Before we get college football, before we get NFL football, the Premier League is back now. By the time you're listening, we've already gone through a round of games, so I don't even want to get into the prediction game. You guys need to be watching the EPL.
Yeah!
The EPL is so much fun. It's great. And I'm going to give you three quick reasons to watch the EPL. Number one, it is the perfect warm-up to college and the NFL because the games are between 6 in the morning and like 11:30 in the morning. Number two, you can watch those games in public at bars and drink early in the morning. And number three...
Big reason right there.
Yeah, number three, I don't know, richest, most diverse, interesting league in the world. One team that you guys got to watch is a team called Bournemouth that has been promoted to the Premier League, has a stadium that holds 10,000 people.
Jesus.
Smallest team to ever get to the Premier League. And
this
now,
office holds more than that.
And now they're getting more money in TV deals because they're in the Premier League than Barcelona does. Barcelona. It's crazy. It's crazy. All right. Fun, easy. Just go watch that shit. All right. That's our show for real. Unless you guys have any closing thoughts.
We did it dirty.
And I want to give a special shout out to Elliot and JC who just they played double duty tonight. They recorded like 10 podcasts already. They did a press junket. All right, we'll catch you guys next time. Thank you for listening.
Hold on, the one extra swan song that I was going to throw out was only because of the fact that he just announced that his last fight was going to be in September, Floyd Mayweather fighting Andre Roberto. Potentially going for the 49-0, but the man who actually did accomplish the 49-0, retired undefeated, Rocky Marciano, retired having fought in his last fight, a Hall of Famer in his own right, Archie Moore, and knocking him out. So I can't think of a better way to go out than being on top and knocking out a Hall of Famer on the way out.
There you go.
Dang.
Done.
Inside the locker, and we're out.